admire your courage, Miss...
Trench. Sylvia Trench. I admire your luck, Mr...
Bond. James Bond.
Bonjour, Monsieur Bond.
Where's 007?
I think he's attempting re-entry, sir.
My God, what's Bond doing?
Keeping the British end up, sir.
Well, tell him to pull out. Immediately.
Can I do something for you, Mr. Bond?
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
Hang on, James.
The thought had occurred to me.
Looking for shells?
No, I'm just looking.
You have a nasty habit of surviving.
Oh, what they say about the fittest.
Do you lose as gracefully as you win?
I wouldn't know. I've never lost.
No more foreplay.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Bond Backwards with the Holmes Movies Podcast team. My name is Anders Holmes, and I'm joined by Holmes, Adam Holmes, over Skype in America.
Hello.
How are you?
That was my bad Christopher Walken.
You amuse me, Mr. Bond.
It's nice to be on the podcast.
Well, I enjoy being on the podcast as well.
I'm delighted that we've finally gone into the sewage hole that is the Roger Moore era. I can't do Roger Moore. What's a sewage hole? What am I talking about?
What is a sewage hole? I've never... A hole is a sewage. Sewage is in a hole.
Well, it could be in a pipe.
Yeah.
I don't know. In any case, there's a lot of sewage in the Roger Moore era. There's a lot of shit to tunnel through.
I mean, it's hard to like shit on these movies, but without sort of feeling like, oh, I mean, Roger Moore, he's passed away, and we have to, I mean, rest.
We're not. Look. We're not dissing Roger Moore. Roger Moore is one of the good guys.
Yeah.
Roger Moore was an amazingly charming, sweet man who, you know, we don't know everything that he did in his life, but he did a lot of stuff for charity. He was elegant. He was, you know, a little bit camp. A lot of fun in interviews. Like, no, it's no disrespect to him at all. You know, let's be honest. He ain't Connery.
No, well, he ain't Dalton or
Craig
or for that matter. He might
be. Unfortunately, like, Lazenby. I feel like Lazenby is just a poor, hapless guy. We'll talk about Lazenby a lot.
Yeah,
I think Lazenby, on Her Majesty's Secret Service podcast, I think we really need to give a lot of time to because
yeah,
that's a big film.
There's a lot to unpack with On Her Majesty's Secret Service, but we'll get to that eventually.
What I'm saying is that I feel like Connery gets Bond. Connery is Bond in many ways still. Craig gets Bond. Dalton gets Bond. There are ways, I think, that Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan seem to get part of Bond, but not the whole picture. And I know that, you know, I'm down on Pierce Brosnan in ways that, you know, millennials or whoever likes Pierce Brosnan might not be into, but like, I just don't believe he's a true representation of the character, even as that character is supposed to appear in those movies. Like, he's just too thick. Anyway, but that we've talked about him, but yeah, Roger Moore, like, what is there to say about Roger Moore? Like, he was in films before any of the Bond movies, really before Connery. I mean, he was in movies in the 1940s, for God's sake.
Yeah, he was in his mid 40s when he did Live and Let Die, and by the time he did A View to a Kill, he was
97.
Yeah, I think, like, it's weird because I watched all of the Bond movies recently, and seeing like from For Your Eyes Only to like A View to a Kill, like in between For Your Eyes Only and A View to a Kill, Roger Moore ages quite drastically. And I think that's sort of what people took a bit of umbrage with this film in particular. Not, I mean, I don't know. I think this film, A View to a Kill, which was the last film that he ever did, and also I think he talks about in his biography, he was a bit unhappy with the production. And Adam is sneezing and he just muted.
Sorry. You tried to keep it together. No, I didn't. I shouldn't have kept the video on.
It's like scenes in films where like someone's having a conversation and then like in the next room in silence, like someone's having like a scuffle or a fight or something. That's literally what that looked like. You just
sorry.
Wow. Okay. I forgot.
Look, you were talking. Look, there's nothing wrong with getting old. Okay. Unless it means that you start watching more Fox News and becoming a reactionary old git. But, like, the generally speaking, age is something that happens to us all.
Yes.
You know, it's fine. It's just that it should have been clear. It should have been clear to people there is a tipping point, you know, and there is a certain point when makeup and costuming and the camera angles can't hide it anymore. And that point was reached in Octopussy comfortably, yes, as you say. So why the hell did they cast Roger Moore in this movie? And what, you know, because the other thing about this film, let's talk about the film, actually, because, like, View to a Kill seems to be wanting to be different from Octopussy, which is a exploding clown car of a movie.
Well, he dresses up like a clown in the film.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is literally a circus.
Well,
and there's
a circus. Here's the thing about View to a Kill. It's a very strange film, and I even found the film to be very strange when I watched it as a younger person, as a child, because it has these moments that are filled throughout Roger Moore's movies. It has these very weird slapsticky bits of comedy, but yeah, it doesn't quite mesh with the very jarring violence that's in the film. They sort of upped the violence a little bit and sort of, you know, paved the way for Timothy Dalton's Bond. It just didn't fit with the style of Roger Moore. I mean, even when they were shooting For Your Eyes Only, there's a scene where Roger Moore was like, you know, I can see why this is the sort of thing James Bond would do, but this is not something that my James Bond would do. And, you know, even he said in his autobiography, he was like, he was quite against this movie a little bit when it came out. He was like, all these violent scenes. And I was like, you know, this is what he said. I was like, I was horrified on the last Bond I did. Whole slews of sequences where Christopher Walken was machine gunning hundreds of people. I said, that wasn't Bond. Those weren't Bond films. It stopped being what they were all about. You didn't dwell on the blood and the brains spewing all over the place. So I think that's kind of where they sort of tried two different things at once and they didn't quite mix well together. Also, it is quite a boring film. Like,
so boring. Fuck me. It is so fucking boring, this movie. Jesus Christ.
I mean, Die Another Day is a bad James Bond film, but it's not boring.
Yeah, it is in its own way. But it's at least you can kind of watch it and heckle it. But, like, this is just dull. And the it's also like,
there's no chemistry between him and Christopher Walken. It's like Christopher Walken feels like he's I mean, what did you say?
Christopher Walken.
I mean, just Christopher Walken just feels like he's in a different film. And also, like, Tanya Roberts, who plays Stacey Sussman, who's the
worst Bond girl.
She was like, this was like,
okay, Bond girl is a problematic term. Okay.
Yeah.
We understand that. So just agree. Let's just see Bond sexism. We see it. We see it there. She's the worst Bond girl.
Yeah,
she's shit.
She has absolutely no chemistry with Roger Moore, and this was like she kind of used this to be like her sort of.
She doesn't have any chemistry with anything anywhere in this movie.
But you know the scene in the film where they sort of infiltrate into the mines, and she's wearing her high heels.
And they call it a mine. Yes.
A mine.
It's not a mine. It's a tomb.
No. I don't. Sorry, I just. John Rhys Davis there for a second.
You just John Rhys Davis all over my Hello Dougie, but anyway.
Let them come. There's still a dwarf in Moria who breathes. Whatever the line
is. Who draws breath.
You got the
quote wrong and you need to stop. So Where were we?
No, oh yeah, like there was the scene where they go into the mine. In the mine.
Oh, Jesus, we're never going to get through this podcast if this keeps happening.
So they go into the mine, and there's a scene where she's wearing her high heels, and there's a like a little quip that Sir Roger Moore says. I'm just trying to find...
Who's Sir Roger Moore now?
Well, it's on IMDb, he's Sir Roger Moore.
Yeah, well, IMDb can... Anyway.
Yeah, it was like, there was some sort of like, because it's like there's, okay, it's the scene when she's coming out and they're wearing the Silicon Valley overalls and they're trying to sort of blend in. And he says, pity you couldn't find one that fits. And she gives him kind of like a look. And this was actually not in the script. Roger Moore actually ad-libbed this bit. And because she refused to film the scene until the wardrobe department made like, you know, custom fitted overalls that would look flattering on her. And because... you know, she was very difficult to work with. John Glenn just basically had to leave all that stuff in and, you know, adhere to all that.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, it doesn't feel like a film where anyone's having a particularly good time.
But even, so, like, Roger Moore and, like, Grace Jones didn't get along at all.
Well, that's hardly somebody. I mean, like, I want to talk about Grace Jones and I want to talk about Patrick McNee. Because, to me... And I want to talk about Christopher Walken. There are three people in this film who I think are abused terribly.
Yeah.
Mayday is the best character in this film and the most enduring character. She's a great Bond henchman, and she's wasted on this movie. There's nothing wrong with her character. There's nothing wrong with her performance. It's a great piece of James Bond stunt casting. It's a great... it's a great character. She plays it to the hilt. It embraces all of like Grace Jones's weirdness. It's also fucking fantastic in the 1980s to have finally a decent like character who's a woman of color in the James Bond franchise. And so she's great and wonderful, and I really like the way her whole story is done. It's just such a shame it has to happen in this film. Christopher Walken, what a waste. What a terrible waste. I wish he could have come back in the mid-90s and done a Bond villain performance when he was a bit older. In fact, he could still do it now. He probably couldn't come back as a villain. He should come back as a twinkly like ally.
He could be like a CIA agent, like yeah, retired CIA agent or something like that.
In the CIA? I got it a minute ago. Oh, anyway. And then Patrick McNee. Now, I love that they get Patrick McNee because he's in The Avengers, which is like the sort of TV cousin of James Bond, and it's all about the 60s and you know, Britain in the 60s, and I love that callback. He gets to play a really fun character, but the problem with having Patrick McNee in this film and putting him alongside Roger Moore is it just looks like two old guys trying to solve crimes, which is what it is. It would be fine if it was like Patrick McNee was the Obi-Wan Kenobi to a younger Bond. Like Patrick McNee and Timothy Dalton, that would work. Patrick McNee and Connery, if that worked in some kind of parallel universe, would work. Or Daniel Craig, you know. But having him play basically opposite his analog in Roger Moore, like, they're the same. You know, they're just a bumbly old dude.
It's like watching two old guys try. It's basically like, it's like Robert De Niro and Al Pacino without the de-aging, Irishman.
Completely. It just doesn't work. And so I just think there's a huge waste of talent that goes on. And I think one of the problems that we have in this film, apart from what's her name,
Tanya Roberts,
the terrible Bond girl, you know, is the fact that the crippling sort of thing at the heart of this film, apart from the fact that it's a stupid story, but that's never stopped Bond films before, is that Roger Moore shouldn't be in the movie. And that's no disrespect to him, but it's like he is too old. He's too old to begin the training.
Well,
and,
I think it was even around Moonraker, in between Moonraker and For Your Eyes Only, because there was like a big, I think it was like 3 or 4 year gap between those films where they weren't quite sure if he was going to come back, because they were looking at other actors, even like Pierce Brosnan and Timothy Dalton or other people as well. So they did bring him back for 3 more movies. And I think watching Views to a Kill recently, and this is meant as no disrespect to Roger Moore at all, he did very much overstay his welcome as James Bond. And I feel like in this sort of era in the 80s, they probably needed someone a bit younger, because they were going for... I mean, they did use Duran Duran for the theme, and the theme is really good.
Yeah, it's a good
theme, and they were trying to go for they were trying to like mix in the MTV style that was kind of going on at the time, and it just didn't really work. The fact that Roger Moore was in the movie.
Roger Moore fundamentally is an actor from the 1960s. You know, he's known for The Saint, and he's known for The Persuaders with Tony Curtis. You know, and it's like he's good at like camp, you know, 60s-y kind of stuff, and that's why he gets into the Bond franchise. The thing about Bond actors is to play the role in the first film, you can't be some kid. You need to be at least in your 30s. You need to look like you've been around the block a little bit. And, you know, you need to have a kind of ruggedness to you, which comes with a more mature actor. So look at Craig in Casino Royale, Connery in Dr. No. Those are your, like, classic models, right? Or even Dalton in Living Daylight. Roger Moore is the perfect age in Live and Let Die. He's, you know, older and more mature than he was when he was a fresh-faced kid in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But this is why I don't think actors should be playing the part 15 years later, because if you get cast when you're in your 30s, or you say you're 35, in 15 years you're going to be, you know, 50-odd. And, well, and I mean, so that's... he starts, his first film is in 1973, you know, 12 years later, and he's already getting on a bit at that point. You know, yeah. It's like he should never have stayed beyond a three or four pictures, and they should have moved on. And this is the problem. The Bond franchise again and again and again doesn't know when to stop and doesn't know when to just drop it, and they keep painting themselves into a corner where they have to do this huge sea change in order to keep the franchise alive.
Well, if they just had
a little bit of like succession planning and a little bit more foresight and a little bit of an understanding that the audience will forgive people in like the part changing.
Yeah.
But once they did it once, you could just keep doing it. You don't have to do a different Bond every film, but do a Bond, you know, do two or three in a row with one actor and then let them move on. I mean, Craig should have gone after Skyfall, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Looking back at, like, you could kind of see, I mean, I'm sort of going a little bit ahead a little bit, but if you look at, like, Connery in You Only Live Twice, he does seem like he's got one foot out the door in that film.
Oh, he has no interest anymore. Like, he wants to be somewhere else, and he was just like, and we'll talk about that when we get there. But
yeah,
but
like,
yeah, as I say, like, that's not, Connery should have gone after Thunderball.
Yeah.
Roger Moore should have gone after For Your Eyes Only, or probably after The Spy Who Loved Me, but whatever.
Would have avoided Moonraker, but we'll get on to that.
Timothy Dalton, you know, it's a shame he didn't get to do more films, but he left at the right time. And Pierce Brosnan should never have been cast. And Craig should have gone after. Craig should have been out of it after Skyfall. So, you know, but it's just like the franchise is so conservative. It's so resistant to change, but it keeps trying to be cool and relevant, like some dorky dad at a barbecue. And this is what this film, like, so the beginning, the pre-credit sequence. Does anyone really need, like, this?
Yeah,
when
he
starts snowboarding,
and then the Beach Boys just randomly start playing.
It's so lame. It's so fucking lame. No one is listening to the Beach Boys in 1985.
Yeah.
Yes, they played Live Aid. I get that, but like, no one. Like, come on.
No, I literally forgot that was actually in the film, and I was watching it, going like, is that the what? And
this is a feature. This is a recurring feature of the Roger Moore movies, using sound effects or pieces of music from other films as like a reference. It's insane. It's jumping the shark. Like, it's beyond jumping the shark. It's beyond breaking the fourth wall.
I mean, just going back to what you were saying before, because with a lot of Roger Moore's movies, they put themselves into a hole, but then they sort of went back and, you know, tried, like, you know, when the response to each film's got, like, Man with a Golden Gun, that was quite negatively received, and then they did The Spy Who Loved Me, but then they fucked it up when they did Moonraker, and then they had to go back and do it again with For Your Eyes Only, which was successful and more well received, but then they shot themselves in the foot with Octopussy and then A View to a Kill. So it was like they should have just carried on with what worked with those two films. And For Your Eyes Only and The Spy Who Loved Me were those two films that Roger Moore actually enjoyed doing. And his best... Actually, those are the two films where I would say those are his best like performance as Bond.
Agreed, 100%. And I actually think Spy Who Loved Me is one of the best Bond movies, but we'll get to that. Should we actually talk about this film? Should we do some of our fun features?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite scene in the film, I don't know, it's hard to say really, because there's a I do kind of like the fight sequence on the Golden Gate Bridge at the end, because it adds a little bit of Vodico aspect to it, which I quite like.
Yeah, but the problem is it's impossible to believe that Roger Moore is doing that, and the special effects aren't good enough.
Yeah.
It's a good idea, and the airship is cool, but it's just not... I don't know, it feels like the end of like a bad Spielberg movie or something. You just don't care. Like, you don't feel invested at that point. Again, it's just like, it's an idea that should have been in a different Bond movie. I'm just saying that's a bad, like, I'm just, my, I, weirdly enough, like, I think one of the best scenes for me is it's stuff with Mayday. Like, I'd really like the fight sequence between her and Christopher Walken, the like, where they're training.
Yeah, that's a good bit. I like
there's
that.
There's so much kind of like weird sort of odd, like offbeat kind of eroticism in that scene, but also genuine sort of violence, and it's a little bit of a precursor to good old Xenia on a top or whatever, but without the histrionics. I just think that's a cool bit. Sets them both up as kind of creepy and upsetting figures.
The problem is they didn't really follow through on it, because then she switches sides randomly at the end of the movie, and then she sacrifices herself, which is weird.
Well, the thing is, I don't mind that she does that. It's the problem is we've already had that once with Jaws.
Yeah.
So we've already done that in a Roger Moore movie. It's like they actually literally can't bear to like kill their darlings, even though she does die. But you know what I mean? Like they can't dispatch these villains. They have to turn them into like cartoon characters. Which is why, you know, Spy Love Me works, but Moonraker is terrible.
We'll get to
many
it.
More of these to do. I think that's my favorite scene. Just it's a small scene, but I think it's what it's supposed to be there. It's supposed to be in a Bond movie.
What do you think about the Paris sequence? Because that's okay, but then when it gets to him getting in the car, and then every time he like hits something, the car just like breaks like a toy.
Yeah, it's idiotic. The assassination is completely stupid with the poison butterfly thing on a fishing rod. Like, what is that? Although it's like weird and funny and Grace Jonesy in its own way. But the chase up the Eiffel Tower, I mean, that has to be done. So that's kind of cool. But the car chase is lame and stupid.
Yeah. Who would you recast in the film?
Roger Moore.
Apart from Roger Moore, who would you recast?
Okay. Let's see then. I would recast probably Tanya Roberts, to be honest, because she is rubbish. You know what? Alison Doody. It's really nice to see Alison Doody in this.
I didn't even know she was in the movie. I was very surprised.
Yeah, playing Jenny Flex. So I might just promote her. But I suppose if I was recasting someone who's good at this time, actually, you know who? What I'd do? American actress, blonde, and you need someone like that. Just put Kim Basinger in it. I mean, I know she did Never Say Never Again, but if pretend Never Say Never Again doesn't exist, put Kim Basinger or Michelle Pfeiffer in that role.
Yeah, I could definitely see Michelle Pfeiffer playing that role, and she would actually do that role. She would actually do well in that. I mean, based off her performance in Scarface,
she can act on like bloody Tony Roberts.
She could easily be like, just that scene in when she rejects Al Pacino in the nightclub sequence. That easily could be, you know, her rejecting James Bond in this movie. Like, get away from me, old man. We're not gonna have sex. Get away from me.
Yes.
The person that I would recast if. Like, I mean, I like Christopher Walken. I do feel like he doesn't quite work as a Bond villain in some ways.
I feel like he could have done it in a different movie.
But I think, I don't know. I'm just thinking like who could play like Max Zorin do you know who I think could have done it okay, maybe?
No.
Viggo Mortensen.
That sort of weird Germanic angle. I mean, it's a cool idea, this idea of like a weirdly genetically engineered Nazi experiments gone wrong.
I don't know why they never really they didn't seem to like adapt on that when they mentioned it. It was almost kind of like a throwaway bit of exposition and explaining a bit about the guy, what's his name, Dr. Mortner, played by Willoughby Gray, but they didn't really adapt. I wish that was more part of the film. I don't know, it just seems strange.
Okay, so what is the stupidest bit of the movie?
I
mean, take your pick.
Maybe my stupidest bit in the film is the from a scientific point of view, is the bit where he's breathing in the air from the tire underwater.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
I think Mythbusters are one of those people, they tried that and they were like, doesn't work.
No, I mean, it's so crap. I mean, it's like, doesn't he just have his rebreather? I mean, he brings that out in one of the Craig ones, doesn't he? So that's dumb. I mean, the fire engine chase sequence. There's only one film that has a fire engine chase sequence, and that's Con Air. That's the only film that should have it. You need John Cusack and Nick Cage to have a good fire engine chase sequence, and even that's stupid.
You ain't getting near my daughter. Buckle up.
Jesus H Christ. That's where I'm at with that.
Yeah, and it was the last film that Lois Maxwell was in as Moneypenny.
Oh, that's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Talk about going out on a fucking low.
Do you know, I think someone added up all her screen time in all of the films that she did. Do you know what it added up to? Like, overall, her screen time in all of the movies. Do you know what it was?
Half an hour?
1 hour.
Oh, okay. More than I thought.
I think
she's a treasure. She's a real treasure of the franchise.
She was great.
Okay, have we done all our fun stuff?
Favorite location, where would you want to go?
Paris.
Yeah, me too. Or maybe Max Zorin's little like palace in the middle of nowhere, wherever it is.
Ugh, no, that's horrid. Isn't that like in the middle of the desert somewhere?
No, it's not. It's that little, it's like that.
I'm thinking about Moonraker, sorry.
No, not that. No. God, no.
Well, San Francisco, I suppose.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Silicon Valley. It's nice.
Well, I don't want Silicon Valley necessarily, but San Francisco is supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Okay, actually, hang on a minute, because I've just remembered the title of the movie. One of the stupidest bits is when she says, "What of you?" And he goes, "Yeah, to a kill."
Oh, God, yeah. It's like...
fucking hell, guys.
It's like that...
That is not a phrase. No one says that. Not even like weird psycho Nazi orphan genetic experiments say that.
It's like that. There was that meme. There's like that. Like there's this image that online. There's been like this sort of craze that started out with like there's a bit in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where Leonardo DiCaprio is like pointing, and it's
yes,
like
yes. Anders, don't talk to me like I'm 85. I'm familiar with the meme.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like I would use that meme every time when someone says the Bond title in the film. I'd be like, oh, there they go.
Yeah. I scared the living daylight out of her.
Code name Thunderball.
Yeah, that's right. Bernard Lee is the only person who's allowed to say the title of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, all right then. Well, let's get out of here and then we get to talk about Octopussy next time.
That's going to be a very interesting one.
Oh, God, there's so much to talk about in that movie.
From an all-time high. Yeah. Well, that concludes another episode of Bond Backwards. Thank you very much for listening. We have been ranting about A View to a Kill. It's going to be a lot more of this in this sort of part of the episodes.
Goodbye, Mr. Bond.
Yeah, you amuse me, Mr. Bond. The feeling isn't...
You're so much better at it than me. I wish I could do better Christopher Walken.
It's like, he says, "You amuse me, Mr. Bond." And he's like, "The feeling isn't mutual."
Yeah, shut up, Roger. We love you, really, though.
Yeah. It's like, oh, get out of here, you, but know that I love you. Well,
yeah.
But, yep, well, stay tuned for next time where we get on to talking about Octopussy. Have a good day.
Stinging in the rain.
That's not funny, 007.
Where's your butler friend?
Oh, he blew a fuse.
Shocking.
Where's Drax?
Oh, he
had to fly.
Positively shocking.
You missed, Mr. Bond.
I think he got the point.
Right idea, Mr. Bond. But wrong pussy.
You're not thinking that.
I sure am, boy.
You expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Goodbye, Mr. Bond.
Mr. Smith and Wesson. And you've had your six.